morning, and may it please the court. Priya Vishwanath, the petitioner, Mr. Khosrow Dellala. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This case is about Mr. Dellala's right to appeal to the board under 5 CFR section 353.304, the denial of his restoration rights following his recovery from an on-the-job injury. In writ to deciding this jurisdictional issue, the board also held that Mr. Dellala lacked restoration rights altogether. However,
let me ask you at the outset, just to understand what the parameters of the claim are. Suppose we should agree with you that the board had jurisdiction, and suppose we should also agree that by virtue of that, Mr. Dellala was an employee for purposes of board review and for purposes of the rights conferred by the restoration statute. What does he get out of that if the agency is free to say at any point, presumably for some reason other than that he was injured, that they don't need his services anymore?
That's precisely the point, Judge Bryson, that they couldn't have removed him for an unlawful purpose.
Right. And this, but is there any suggestion here that they did remove him for an unlawful purpose as opposed to their general right, which I understand is under reemployed annuitants, they can remove you for simply because they don't need you anymore, or they decide they'd really rather have somebody else or somebody who's working as a regular employee?
Well, the remedy at the minimum here would be for the 2 months that they failed to respond altogether to his requests for restoration. And then moving forward beyond that, if his removal was due to his injury, and there are some allegations of that, these facts weren't decided below.
But that's part of a different claim. That's not the claim that's in front of us. We don't have to decide, nor would the MSPB have, in this case, decide whether or not he came for an improper purpose. That's not part of what's in front of us, correct?
Well, the remedy could extend beyond his removal if that removal was also part of his
That's not part of this claim that's in front of us for this court to decide.
This court is right now just deciding whether the board has jurisdiction over reemployed annuitant's denial of restoration. And this court has previously held that a removal that's based on a that can amount to a denial of restoration rights as well. Mr. Dellala initially attempted here to appeal the agency's actions based on two grounds, both adverse action, section 7701, and the denial of restoration rights. Because he belatedly added the denial of restoration rights claim, the board in his first appeal failed to address that issue and told him he should appeal that separately, which he did. So any of the actions of the board that didn't amount to denial of restoration rights could be appealed as part of this appeal.
I appreciated that there were two separate claims, one for the adverse action that was proceeding separately from this, and that would go to the heart of whether he was improperly removed. And then the second one was whether or not he is a reemployed annuitant is entitled to restoration rights, which seems to me separate and apart from whether or not they're entitled to fire him for whatever reason that they may have done so.
Well, the removal here could also be a denial of restoration rights. The first... The first appeal was an appeal of his removal based solely on the adverse action jurisdictional ground.
What's the status of that case?
And that case was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. And he had tried before it was dismissed to add the jurisdictional ground that the agency's actions amounted to a denial of his restoration rights. But the agency refused to address that ground because it was added after his initial complaint was filed.
And the dismissal of the first action, was that appealed to us?
That was not appealed to this court.
So why should we now consider as part of this appeal something that was litigated in a separate claim and not properly appealed?
Well, all that was litigated in the first claim was whether the agency had jurisdiction to hear an appeal of his removal based on Section 7701. And that was dismissed. And so that's, for example, why we haven't appealed here that he may have had that he may have actually not have been a reemployed annuitant, because that was an issue that was litigated in the first claim. But whether all of the agency's actions denied amounted to a denial of restoration, and the remedy due to that, which according to, for example, Smith versus Army, may extend beyond his removal, are part of this claim. So anything that he can prove on remand would have was a denial of restoration rights, would be part of this appeal.
But would he be limited to argue that he was denied his restoration rights on remand? That would be the limit of the scope of the remand, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. But as in the Roche case, when someone is removed from their position, that can also amount to a denial of his restoration rights. For example, if he was, in that case, the employee was restored to a position that presumably accommodated a partial recovery from an injury, but didn't actually accommodate that. And so he was then removed.
What impact does a restoration right have to a reemployed annuitant who is essentially an employee at will? So he could be restored to his position and the next day he could be terminated.
Could be.
What is the substance and value of the restoration right at that point?
This is one of the three errors that the board made, was basically implying that at-will employment is an absolute right, and this is an error that the agency also makes here. At-will employment is limited by exceptions due to public policy and other statutes. For example, here, there are statutes prohibiting various personnel practices, discrimination, whistleblowing, which the board has found that reemployed annuitants have the right to protection from. This is another such example where restoration from an injury is a right that reemployed annuitants have because to effectuate the purposes of the Compensation Act, which is to provide them, to put them back into the position that they would have been absent their injury.
So is the essence of your argument then that under FICA, the employee is restored and he has all of the rights under those particular restorations because of his injury? So he could not be terminated because he was injured on the job.
He could not be, precisely, Your Honor, he couldn't be terminated because he was injured on the job. He could be terminated for other reasons, and he could also be terminated due to, for example, a RIF. An employee that's out on leave without pay can always be terminated due to a RIF or due to some other purpose.
But you said he could be terminated for other reasons. I guess I don't understand that to be the definition of at will. I understood it to be, it doesn't have to be a reason. You can be terminated for any reason but for a few very carefully carved out exceptions due to discrimination or harassment type of really inappropriate behavior that we want to discourage in all instances. And so, am I wrong? Is an at-will employee, can he only be terminated for a reason, as you stated a minute ago?
Well, if the employee comes forward with a purpose that's prohibited, and here we argue that Mr. Dalloff's position is that terminating an employee due to an injury that he suffered on the job is a prohibited reason.
What is the state of the record? We don't have the full record here, of course, but what is the state of the record with respect to his assertion that he was fired because of his injury?
Your Honor, actually, all that has been decided below is that the board decided that this wasn't untimely because if he had restoration rights, then he needed to get notice. And then secondly, that the board may not have had jurisdiction at all. But in the board's first remand decision to the AJ, the AJ was required to give Mr. Delalat notice as to how he could make his non-frivolous allegations. So it was still actually unclear to the board whether this was even a partial recovery or a full recovery, and what particular actions he was alleging were those actions that resulted in the failure to restore.
And did he then produce a set of allegations with respect to the reasons for his firing?
The AJ never gave him that opportunity.
Isn't quite the right word, I guess.
The AJ never gave him that opportunity because on remand from the board, she dismissed the case for lack of jurisdiction.
So there was never such a filing.
Right. So the AJ has never given him the notice as to what he needs to prove to make non-frivolous allegations. All she did on remand was to dismiss the case without a hearing for lack of jurisdiction because he's a green client.
Is there, to your knowledge, any evidence that as to the reason for the agency's deciding not to continue his at-will employment?
There is some other evidence in the record, Your Honor, but that the agency put in his employment file into the record, and there you can see that it appears that their argument below was that they never received any requests for restoration from him, and that they sent him, and in the end, they ended up sending him a letter saying, we think that you've recovered, but we haven't heard from you in a while, so we're removing you. So it's unclear why. So it appears that it was due to his injury. That he'd asked for restoration, and they apparently didn't route these letters to the correct location, and so then they just removed him because they hadn't heard from him.
Well, they never answered his request for restoration.
Right. So they never responded, but the board has made the factual finding that they did receive them based on his post office receipts. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, if I may.
Very well. We'll reserve your full rebuttal.
Thank you.
Let's hear from the government.
May it please the court. The Air Force took one action in this case, and that was to terminate Mr. Dalalot. Now, Mr. Dalalot attempts to recharacterize his termination as a failure of restoration.
Why did they terminate him?
That's not clear from the record. And, of course, the Air Force didn't need to state a reason.
Would it be improper, though, if they terminated him because he was injured?
No, not.
Because
he did not have restoration rights.
Wait, but no. Apart from restoration rights, is it proper to terminate an employee because they get injured?
An employee at will, yes it is.
Suppose he were still receiving OWCP payments.
Then I think it would still be the same. There is no restriction on the government's ability to terminate.
Now the board has held to the contrary, if I understand correctly. The Ochoa case, are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that contrary to the proposition that the reemployed annuitant can be fired during the tenure, during the period that he's receiving OWCP payments?
If I recall, Ochoa was in the context of a probationary employee, is that right?
No. Ochoa was somebody who decided to, he had been injured long before, and he decided to take OWCP rather than disability retirement. And then when he recovered, he said, right, they terminated him, though, while he was still being paid OWCP, as I recall the facts. And the board said we do have jurisdiction under those circumstances.
But I don't believe Ochoa was a probationer or a reemployed annuitant. Is that right?
He's a reemployed annuitant. That's how he was characterized. And in fact,
I know they described it as a reemployed annuitant.
We recognize an exception in cases where the reemployed annuitant is entitled to restoration rights based on compensable injury. So that seems to be inconsistent. That's the board's position. Right. It seems inconsistent with the argument that there's no jurisdiction whatsoever and they can terminate him even for injury. I mean, suppose that what we had in this case was they said, you've been injured, we can't use you anymore, you're gone. You say, board can't touch that?
That's right, because he simply doesn't have restoration.
With the board's previous positions, though, in the cases in which the board has said, you can't do that.
Well, of course, this court isn't bound by any decisions of the board. This court's duty is to apply Congress's will. And in this instance,
we might not be bound by the board's determinations, but if they've already indicated at least what they believe is a reinstatement right, as those two cases that Judge Bryson pointed to, both Oche and the footnote in Beauvais, saying, in fact, we have recognized and expressed an exception in cases where the reemployed annuitant is entitled to restoration rights based upon a compensable injury. So they haven't recognized it. in two cases of age. But I think it's contrary to congressional intent, contrary to the statute. What is the basis for that recognition?
I don't think there is a basis for the recognition of a restoration right in that context. And you know, if you know the reasoning in Ochoa is unsound because I don't think the board considered whether or not Mr. Ochoa actually was re-employed new to him. If he was collecting OWCP benefits, then he would not have been an annuitant pursuant to the definition set out in Chapter 82, or 81.
A re-employed annuitant is eligible for FICA benefits for injuries on the job. So you are eligible as a re-employed annuitant for FICA benefits. Can you terminate that person while he's receiving FICA benefits?
You're talking about a re-employed annuitant who is collecting FICA benefits at the time of his termination. I have two responses to that, Your Honor. First, I would say yes, because Congress has said that re-employed annuitants are employees at will. That has a very definite connotation to it. But basically, employees at will have no employment protection save for protections against discrimination or constitutional violations or whistleblower protections.
Well, they
Congress can't terminate them while they're injured and receiving benefits, can you?
Yes, that's right, you can. Or the government can terminate a re-employed annuitant because he is an at-will employee. That is not a part of at-will employment. Now, there's something else I should point out. I'm sorry to cut you off. Your question, Judge Mahars, doesn't quite fit the facts of this case because Mr. Gelhaw was not collecting OWCP benefits at the time he was terminated. And I think that's something you know, worth looking at in a little bit more detail is the timeline here.
Well, here's what strikes me as the difficult aspect of the case perspective of your argument. You're saying on the one hand, well, he's an employee at will, which means that the government can fire him for any reason or no reason. But you qualify that properly, I think, by saying, well, but there are some bad reasons, and the government can't fire him for those, and presumably the board would have jurisdiction over at least some of those bad reasons to say to the agency, you can't fire him for those reasons, whistleblowing, for example. So we know that the at-will doesn't cover everything. There are some bad reasons that presumably they can't fire him for. They can't say all re-employed annuitants who are black are now hereby released.
Yeah,
secure to that, even though it's at will, correct?
Then obviously not.
Sure. So then the question is the right conferred by CEPA statute of restoration rights and so forth, one of those bad reasons for firing somebody, i.e. that he was injured on the job. And simply saying no, because he's an at-will employee, doesn't seem to me to answer that very precise question, because by simply saying, well, the at-will sweeps everything off the table, you're ignoring the fact that there are some things as to which the board does have jurisdiction, and the question comes down to whether this is one of them, and if not, why not? What's special about this that distinguishes it from, say, whistleblowing?
Well,
you know, to make the point more precisely, suppose on the day that he got injured, the agency had said, you've been injured, we therefore can't use you anymore, you're out of here. Your position, I take it, is he has no right with respect to that situation.
That's correct.
Why is that different in kind from somebody saying, well, you're a whistleblower, you're out of here?
Because there's a very clear public policy and statutory protection for whistleblowers in that context.
As there is for injured employees. So
I don't think that's correct, though, Your Honor. I don't think that there is a statutory penalty. Congress indicated an intent to abrogate the at-will employment doctrine in that context.
Did Congress specifically speak in the whistleblower statute to at-will employees? I mean, I don't remember anything explicit about that. I think it was just a decision that clearly were intended to be a sufficiently broad-based public policy that we're not going to permit you to exclude at-will employees from the protection of that policy, just as we don't from racial discrimination. Why not?
Certainly no court has recognized a public policy exception under these circumstances. And I think there are a couple reasons why it should. First of all, Mr. Gelhaw did not argue for one below in this instance. He's not presented any authority to set one out, and has not presented any authority to suggest that the same sort of public policy rationales that motivate exceptions in other contexts would motivate an exception or exist in this case. Moreover, there are no facts that would support such a public policy exception. Mr. Bellot, in fact, did not allege that his termination was in any way related to the fact that he had a compensable injury. And the fact is, when he was terminated on October 31st, 2003, he did not have a compensable injury. He had not had a compensable injury for close to 8 months at that time. He stopped receiving OWCP benefits in February of 2003. So he was not collecting benefits at that point. And he had another surgery on September 29th of 2003, which meant that he was unable to return to work at the time of his termination for reasons apart from a compensable benefit. He had a non-compensable benefit that prevented him from returning to work. So,
what happens in a situation, though, in the FECA, which defines a term employee with four exceptions, and those exceptions are not applicable to the present situation? So, under FECA, he is an employee as defined by the statute, right? Same way as a whistleblower would cover a whistleblower statute.
He is an employee under the FECA definition. He is not, or at least the board hasn't addressed the issue. But actually, step back. The board hasn't addressed that issue, and I don't know that all the facts have been elucidated on that issue before the board. Secondly, the board certainly didn't consider whether he's an employee under 2105, which is the Title V definition of employee, which requires that.
Well, you would be covered under 8151, which is the FECA statute, because there are only four exceptions to the FECA statute. Unless he fit within one of the exceptions, he would be within the employee category.
Right, the FECA definition uses the term employee, which relates back to 2105, which is the general definition of employees in Title V. And in that context, in 2105, the definition requires that the person be engaged in federal activity. At that time, and of course, at the time of Mr. Dellaw's termination, he was not engaged in any sort of federal activity. He had not been at work for close to 8 months at that point due to a non-compensable injury.
Does he have to be engaged in federal activities when he is terminated or when he is injured? Which would restrict the actions of the agency from terminating while he is injured.
I believe that the assessment of whether or not he is an employee for purposes of FECA has to occur at the time, during the time period that he's alleging he was entitled to restoration rights. If he's alleging that he was entitled to restoration from the period between August 4th, 2003 and September 29th of 2003, then if he's attempting to establish jurisdiction on the basis of facts that occurred during that time, then he must have been an employee during that time.
If we conclude that the board does have jurisdiction over this claim, then what do you think we should do with the case?
Well, first, Your Honor, I don't think the court can conclude on the facts that are in the record that the board does have jurisdiction. I think at most the court could go so far as to say that the board erred in its reasons for not finding jurisdiction in this case. But as I was just explaining, first of all, the board did not make a determination as to whether or not Mr. Dellaw is an employee under 2105. The board did not make a determination as to whether or not Mr. Dellaw is a, quote, injured employee under 353.304, given that he was not suffering from a compensable injury, which is the definition of an injured employee.
Sounds like you're arguing that we should remand the case if we find that the board's reasons for finding that he was not entitled to any protection under the statute are wrong.
That's right, Your Honor. Now,
what I was looking for is there an argument that you would have to say that we can affirm anyway, notwithstanding saying that, well, the board was wrong in saying that there's no jurisdiction, but we can still affirm for some other reason. It doesn't sound like you're making that.
Well, I think you would need another jurisdictional basis. And I think the argument, as we've laid it out, provides one. That is, first, we're arguing that that the agency did not fail to restore him because the facts underlying his alleged failure to restore are, in effect, a termination. And Congress has said that very clearly that reemployed annuitants may not challenge their terminations. Now, secondly,
because the facts are not very well developed in this case. I'm not sure just what the facts are. And
well, even based on Mr. Delalette's allegations, however, I mean, if you take Mr. Delalette's allegations at their face value, which the court would be required to do at this point, they simply don't lay out enough to show a failure to restore on the part of the agency.
Counsel, you sort of resisted agreeing that a reemployed annuitant could be deemed an employee under the regulation when Judge Gallarza was asking questions about the four exceptions. And I guess I was surprised because I thought that your response would have been, regardless of whether he's an employee, he is an at-will employee under the statute. And so an at-will employee has some fundamental difference vis-a-vis whether or not we have to continue employing you. So whether or not he fits the regulatory definition of employee, it is still a qualified employee by virtue of the very statute directed to reemployed annuitants. Is that part of the government's position, or is your position, nope, no way, no how, not an employee, don't even think about it?
Our position is that he is an employee at will. I guess I've been
employee for purpose, I think what Judge Moore is asking, is he an, are you conceding that he's an employee for purpose of the statute, but that his at will status limits his rights under the statute? But do you understand the distinction? What I understood Judge Moore's question to be.
I think what Judge Moore is asking is whether or not we're conceding that he is, that Mr. Delalette is an employee under the FICA definition.
Right.
Am I correct? Mm-hmm. That's okay. And we do not concede that. That was not an issue that was considered by the board. And I don't think that there are enough facts in this record to support that conclusion. I see the line. Time's up.
What Judge Preston then pointed out should be remanded to complete the record of the jurisdictional issue and determine whether or not under FICA he does have employee rights and whether or not under FICA he would have reemployment rights.
No, Your Honor, because even if you accept Mr. Delalette's allegations made below, they are insufficient to make out the type of claim that he asserts.
Where can those allegations be found?
There is, Mr. Delalette responded, well, take a step back. After the full board considered the case, remanded back to the administrative judge, and with instructions to issue an order to show cause, establishing jurisdiction, Mr. Delalette responded to that word, show cause.
I thought your opposing counsel said that he had not had an opportunity to lay out his factual predicate for his claim.
That's something probably this response should address on rebuttal, I suppose. But there is a response to the show cause order in my group.
Can I ask one more question before we disappear? I'm trying to wrap my head around the procedural posture of what were apparently viewed as two separate claims here. The first for termination, the second for restoration rights. And I guess I think a lot of the discussion that we've had today seems to blend the two, and I don't know what obligation, if any, we have to focus on one rather than the other. What exactly happened in the termination claim that wasn't appealed and was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction? What were the allegations, and is it government's position that that is completely separate from the restoration claim, or does the restoration claim, as I think your opposing counsel suggested, sweep in the termination as well?
Mr. Delalette's challenge to his termination was dismissed on the ground that the board didn't have jurisdiction because Mr. Delalette is very clearly not an employee under 5 U.S.C. 7511, which has a specific exclusion for annuitants from the definition of employee. So the definition in 7511 is the definition that applies to the Chapter 75 board's jurisdiction for terminations. That's correct. So his appeal was dismissed on that basis. Our argument is very, this really goes to the core of our argument, which is that there is no separate distinct action. The Air Force terminated Mr. Delalette. It had the right to do that, given that he was an employee at will. And Mr. Delalette raises the Roche case in response to the Roche line of cases. And I would point out a few things with regard to those cases. First of all, they apply to probationary employees, which at least have some small measure of protection under the civil service protections. That's not true for employees at will. And certainly, Congress.
Well, they do have a small measure of protection under the civil service laws. They have a protection, for example, in prison.
There are those public policy
gaps than probationers, but they have some. I mean, I think we've established that, right? You can't say they have no rights.
That's right. I mean, save for those public policy exceptions, did they have no rights? But your point is taken, Your Honor. But it, you know, what distinguishes admiral employees from probationary employees is that, you know, certainly if Congress intended to extend the other minimal protections that probationary employees have to reemployed annuitants, it could have done that. I mean, I think Congress was very clear in using the term at will that it intended to only give the minimal type employment protections to reemployed annuitants in that context.
But it doesn't really square with the total at will type of a situation, because the normal parlance at will means you can be terminated for any cause whatsoever. You don't even need a reason for termination. I think that there is some attachment or some protection, even under the at will provisions, for re-employed annuitants. And I think part of the reason for that is congressional policy that they might want to rehire some annuitants for the particular purposes that they are needed. So it's not as if they have a total ability to terminate them for any reason whatsoever. There are some causes and some aspects and rights which they attach at that point, isn't it? I mean, it's not just a blanket right to terminate people.
Well, the only protections they have are the ones that are provided by the public policy exceptions to the employment will doctrine. There are no other, you know, sort of plain vanilla civil service protections that apply to re-employed annuitants.
And one of which is under FICA. They do have rights under FICA as re-employed annuitants. They do have the rights if they're injured on the job to be compensated.
You're not suggesting that somebody who's re-employed annuitant and who gets his hand caught in a machine and is out isn't entitled to FICA, OWCP pants, right?
That's not an issue I'm familiar with, the circumstances for OWCP benefits,
but that OWCP applies in that situation, don't you think? I mean, that, sure.
I suspect that's probably
right. The case. So, as Judge Geyer actually says, we've already opened the door. We know that that's a public policy that applies to employees, which includes re-employed annuitants. Then the next question is, well, if OWCP payments are applicable to these people, why not restoration? You're distinguishing, well, maybe not conceding the OWCP, but it
right.
Seems to me, unless I'm
well, right. The employment will doctrine has nothing to say about compensation for injuries. You know, there's not an understanding in Congress's use of the term employment at will that would purport to deny them benefits under those circumstances.
Right. The question is, are they employees within the meaning of the FICA statute? And if they are, it's kind of hard to say whether they're employees for purposes of injury, but not for purposes of restoration.
If you view their restoration as necessarily a termination, the failure of restoration as a termination, Congress clearly intended to exclude re-employed annuitants from being able to challenge their terminations under those circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see.
I'll first address the factual conclusion. Judge Bryson, you noted that the factual record here is quite incomplete. In the order to show cause that the AJ issued after remand from the board was solely with respect to why there's jurisdiction because Mr. Delalot's a re-employed annuitant and did not address if he had insufficiently made factual allegations. Regarding the agency's position
what about their argument that he wasn't suffering from a compensable injury either at the time he asked for restoration or at the time that they actually terminated him? He wasn't receiving OWCP benefits if he was in fact unable to work for a period of time due to an unrelated second injury for which he had a scheduled surgery in September. Because I'm wondering, I guess I want you to explain that, but I'm wondering, is your position that if an employee, a reemployed annuitant, has any injury at all for any reason, he has to be restored, or is it if he suffers an on-the-job injury, he has to be restored?
Well, the FECA statutes apply to what the OWCP calls compensable injuries, and so here it's the injury that the OWCP recognized that he suffered as a reemployed annuitant and for which they provided compensation. It's true that after he stopped receiving compensation...
Wait, so your position is he's entitled to restoration rights if he, because of suffering, or when... You're entitled to restoration rights if you suffer from a compensable injury. So you are not arguing to us that restoration rights should extend regardless of the purpose or regardless of the injury he had.
Yes, sir. Section 8151 explicitly states...
I just want to make sure. So that's how you deal with this factual situation that the government suggested, which is it isn't that he couldn't return to work because of the compensable injury, that was over and done. It was that he couldn't return to work because of another second scheduled surgery.
This is a set of arguments that wasn't raised below and hasn't
been factual reason to remand the case.
Well, certainly the factual basis. If this court should to find that reemployed annuitants do fall under FECA, as the OWCP certainly recognizes, and they provide compensation benefits to reemployed annuitants.
That's correct. Is it and not if I'm a reemployed annuitant, then I'm injured on the job. OWCP payments are paid.
Correct. There's never been any decision that we've been able to find by an agency arguing that that's not the case. They seem to want to carve out just Section 8151, which there seems no real reason to try to do. Their Section 2105...
It's the same definition of employee, both the OWCP payment and the restoration.
Right, correct. The agency brings up Section 2105, which it's true that that provides the definition of employee as applicable to all of Title V, but the definition there is just that an employee is anyone who's appointed in the civil service by various people, including other employees. That was certainly the case here. And the jurisdictional statute, Section 353.304, the regulation, provides that an injured employee or former employee. So it's not that only an employee who's been restored can appeal lack of restoration, but a former employee, which is the case here. He was a former employee who was out on leave without pay and sought restoration rights. In addition, reemployed annuitants, I think that the agency and the board attempt to cast reemployed annuitants as these employees that have no rights. And it's quite clear that they have various appeal rights, such as for prohibited practices, which are statutory rights. For example, and they're not all constitutional public policy appeal rights. They're, for example, the prohibited practices statute prevents discrimination based on national origin, sexual orientation, all types of discrimination, as well as whistleblowing.
Would that be appealable to the board, or would that be something you'd have to proceed through Title VII?
Well, they would go through, the statute requires that they go to the Office of Special Counsel, and that if they don't get relief there, then they bring an individual right of action against the agency directly with the board.
Even for discrimination, for a discrimination claim in a, for a reemployed annuitant, goes to the board in that situation?
A whistleblowing claim under prohibited practices,
yeah, but,
goes to the board.
But I'm talking about discrimination. If there's a discrimination claim that I was let go from my position as a reemployed annuitant because of my race, would that go through the board, or would you have to bring it as the Title VII?
I think there's also under the prohibited practices statute, there's the Title VII right to go under that road, but I think there's also a road to go to the Office of Special Counsel and then bring an individual right of action to the board. But in this case, the public policy exception applies just as well because Congress stated when enacting Section 8151, excuse me, in 1974, that their goal was to restore injured employees to the rights that they would have had. Reemployed annuitants have numerous rights, including some that are based on their term of length of service. For example, after they've been reemployed annuitants for a year, they get a supplemental annuity. After they've been reemployed annuitants for 5 years, they get a recalculation of their annuity altogether. They have a right to accumulate sick leave and vacation, which that gets cashed out upon termination. And they also have what the OPM calls the right to be in a tenure group, which determines the order in which they would be let go if there's a reduction in force. So based on whether they're permanent, conditional, or term re-employed annuitants, they would be in one of these tenure groups. And these are all rights that should be restored to a re-employed annuitant, and that the purpose of Section 8151 can't be effectuated unless he's restored with all of those rights.
But isn't a restoration right really the ability to be placed in the same position you were in? So it's whatever rights that the re-employed annuitant would have if he is restored to the position of an attached veteran. But they are limited in certain respects.
Yes, Your Honor. And here we don't argue that he would be re-employed as a re-employed annuitant and therefore still be an outlaw employee. So while the agency says, they could then terminate him for some other reason, like they just didn't like him or something, but they certainly couldn't do so for one of the prohibited reasons, and here it would be due to his injury. For example, they couldn't put him back into a job and then just not believe that he's really recovered and terminate him for that reason.
It was compensable injury.
Due to his compensable
injury.
Right. Right. And because the statute seems to clearly, at least imply that section, seems to say that Section 8151 grants re-employed annuitants the right to restoration, any remand can maybe flesh out some of the factual issues as to whether there's jurisdiction, but at least with respect to the board's conclusion that re-employed annuitants aren't protected under 8151, the court should reverse.
We just put the board in the awkward position of deciding all these Title VII discrimination claims that occur to the extent that there are many with re-employed annuitants when they don't otherwise actually have jurisdiction over them, because if they can just be dressed up as restoration right claims, then it seems we've created another avenue for appeal of what could be lots of potential discrimination or other types of claims where they wouldn't normally end up in the court.
Your Honor, any type of discrimination or these other claims would go under other statute. Section 8151 only applies to restoration rights, and any discrimination and other types of prohibited practices are not at issue.
I'm denied my restoration rights because I was injured, I guess that's the only one that would fall in on the restoration. Okay, so the board would decide the injury ones and everything else would go to EEOC or where does it go?
And as acting special counsel and Bravo, the two board cases held, that whistleblowing cases also have the individual right of action can be brought directly.
Thank you. The case is submitted.